Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
From Iowa Public Radio News, this is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly legislative podcast. I'm John Pemble. Last year, Representative Matt Winschittle authored a bill with a dozen divisions expanding gun rights in Iowa. It includes making it legal to carry a concealed pistol on the Capitol with a permit and a stand-your-ground provision allowing people to use deadly force in defense. During the 2017 House debate for that bill, he answers many questions.
If I had my druthers, a law-abiding Iowan would be able to carry a firearm wherever they are lawfully present.
Last year, when speaking with gun rights advocates at the Capitol, he reiterates his commitment for more legislation in 2018.
And this sets us up for future successes. This sets us up so we can come back next year and continue to get our freedoms back that have been encroached upon over generations.
And this year, he authors a resolution adding a state constitutional amendment and presents it during a subcommittee.
The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The sovereign state of Iowa affirms and recognizes the fundamental right of the people to acquire, keep, possess, transport, carry, transfer, and use arms for all legitimate purposes. Any and all restrictions of this right shall be subject to strict scrutiny.
During an appearance last month on Iowa Public Radio's talk show River to River, Representative Winschittle is asked why an Iowa amendment is necessary.
Number one, Iowa is one of six states that is completely silent on protections for Second Amendment rights in our state constitution. I believe Iowans deserve the same opportunity that citizens of other states have to have in our state constitution protections for this individual fundamental right. I disagree that this is symbolic, and I also disagree that this is about politics. This is not about setting some policy statement saying, hey, we're good on Second Amendment issues. This is about pushing forward the proposal and allowing Iowans that final say if they were to ratify this on the ballot in 2020. I would also disagree with the terminology that we're trying to protect gun rights. Guns don't have rights. People have rights. Individuals have rights. The U.S. Supreme Court has said very clearly that the right to keep and bear arms is an individual fundamental right. Mm-hmm. And yes, the U.S. Constitution says that shall not be infringed. I believe the language that we're proposing in HJR 2009 is more modern day language. If people want to look at it, they can get on the legislative website and view the language. And it adds another layer of protection for these individual rights that if a future legislature wanted to come in and try and roll back some of the advancements we've made in the past decade, they would have to have a higher hurdle to make sure that that met constitutional muster.
For all state constitutional amendments, a resolution has to pass two consecutive general assemblies, then be passed by voters during an election. It's a long process, but this week in the House of Representatives, it begins. Representative Winschittle floor manages this constitutional amendment.
We are silent on the protections that Iowans need and deserve when it comes to defending life and liberty. That's where the proposal before us comes right here today. House Joint Resolution 2009. If you look at it carefully, it says it's going to amend the state constitution, and it's going to go right below Article 1, Section 1. So if this is actually amended into our state constitution, everything I just read will be there. And then right below that, we will be putting in our own protections for Second Amendment on a state level. And the proposal is straightforward. It's simple. We've been working on this for years. In 2012, we ran a broader proposal through this body, and it passed, but it failed in the Senate. So in that time, in that six-year window, we've been having a lot of conversations, talking with a lot of Iowans, people that support the Second Amendment, people that are concerned about how certain enumerations might not do the right thing in the state constitution. So as we've had those conversations, we've decided to keep this as straightforward and as simple as possible. So here's how this will read. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The sovereign state of Iowa affirms and recognizes this right to be a fundamental individual right. Any and all restrictions of this right shall be subject to strict scrutiny.
Winschittle says he knows the strict scrutiny portion of his resolution is a point of controversy.
Now, I'm not a lawyer. When I'm not here wearing a suit and tie and jeans and a t-shirt, dragging my knuckles in a rail yard, switching boxcars. But I have done my research on this. So, if I get this wrong, some of the lawyers in the room can throw a pen at me. But I'm going to give it my novice explanation. Strict scrutiny is the highest level of judicial review. What it means, in layman's terms, is that we mean it. When we put this in the Constitution, we mean it. This is an individual fundamental right, and it shall not be infringed. There are other levels of judicial review that could lead to vague or ambiguous interpretations by the court if a law was written that was not narrowly tailored. So, with strict scrutiny, for a law to pass constitutional muster, if some future legislature decided to add a new restriction on Second Amendment rights, it would have to be narrowly tailored, and it would have to be crafted in a way that effectuates a compelling government interest. That's a high bar, but that's okay with me. I think it should be a high bar when we're talking about fundamental rights.
Representative Mary Wolf introduces an amendment that would remove the strict scrutiny language and substitute it with part of the Bill of Rights.
The amendment that you have before you does, in fact, support the Second Amendment rights of Iowans by actually inserting the Second Amendment language into the Iowa Constitution. It does so in a transparent manner. There's no games here. This isn't an attempt to get anybody in a bad vote. This is just saying, let's work together to do what it is that this HJR 2009 purports to do, which is to allow the people of Iowa to vote yes or no on putting the Second Amendment into the Iowa Constitution.
But Winschittle says it's important to think about the modernization of the language his resolution offers.
I think it's important to have that language in HJR 2009 versus what we have in just the U.S. Constitution. And here's why. I'm not saying I'm smarter than the framers or the founding fathers. I'm not saying that I know something that they don't. Beyond the fact that we've seen courts, lower courts, higher courts, go out and not truly adhere to what the definition and the true meaning behind the Second Amendment is in the U.S. Constitution. I think that as we move this proposal forward, Iowans deserve to be able to have the highest level of protection for their individual fundamental rights as is possible. And that's why we've refined the language in HJR 2009 the way we have, to get it straightforward, but to provide those levels of protection that Iowans need and deserve. And again, we're talking about putting restrictions on government here. That's what this proposal aims to do, is restricting what government can do in infringing a fundamental right of the law-abiding citizen. I don't believe that your amendment gets us as far as where I would like to go, and I believe Iowans deserve to have the higher level of protection that is in HJR 2009.
Representative Scott Orth says he doesn't believe anyone in the House of Representatives is qualified to change the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution.
Therefore, I would ask the body to think very carefully about what we're about to do, as it could have consequences that have not yet been well thought through. 47 states do not have such a measure. Only 3 do: Missouri, Louisiana, and Alabama. So I don't see overwhelming evidence that other states are clamoring to do this thing. And so I suggest we do the right thing and remain true to our call of patriotism, to the United States Constitution, to the flag of our great country, and accept Representative Wolf's amendment and ensconce the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution within the Constitution of the great state of Iowa.
Representative Todd Pritchard asks Winschittle questions about the resolution's language.
So your intent and your thought process as we stand here is that what you are doing is simply mirroring the rights under the Second Amendment, that your language is going no further, that you're proposing the language is going no further than what we already have with the federal Second Amendment. Is that your understanding?
What I am saying with the language is that we are restricting the ability of government to place arbitrary restrictions on law-abiding citizens' individual fundamental rights.
Okay, but now I think we're getting in a circular kind of conversation. Is it the same or is it stronger than the current Second Amendment?
We've already covered that.
And what's the answer? Because I don't think I got a clear answer.
The answer is the language is different than what is in the U.S. Constitution, but it should have the same effect and the same purpose is behind it.
Okay, so it should have the same effect. How will courts apply this in the future? How will they apply your language in the future? Do you know how that will be applied?
I do not have a crystal ball, and I cannot predict what the future may or may not hold,
right.
But if there,
I think
there
it's
were
a fair
challenge on a restriction, then they would be required to put it at that highest level of review.
I think you put it well when you said you don't have a crystal ball. I don't think you know, or I don't think anybody can know, how this will be applied. And that's why I view as suspect when you say, I don't see how courts will tamper or roll back or change any of the existing laws on the book. How can you say that with confidence?
I say it with the confidence because someone would have to bring that challenge. They would have to go all the way to the courts. The courts would have to look at what the legislature has done, what the intent behind this language is, and then they would have to determine whether the laws that we have on the books are narrowly tailored to effectuate a compelling government interest. And I believe that you could look at many of the regulations we have on the books right now, at least the ones that people have brought to me that are most concerning, whether it's the permitting laws, background checks, anything of that nature, and I would argue that the courts would be duty-bound to uphold those statutes as they stand right now.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Yep. As many of you know, I'm both an Army veteran for 22 years. I'm currently serving, and I'm also a lawyer. I've defended in court criminal cases, and I have prosecuted in court criminal cases. And I think Representative Winchell puts it absolutely correct when he can say, "I have no crystal ball." What we are doing here with his amendment is saying all of the current laws are now subject to this strict scrutiny, whether they have been or not. None of us here can say how they will be applied. None of us here can say how they'll be used and interpreted by the courts going forward.
The amendment by Representative Wolf that would instead put the federal Second Amendment in the state constitution loses. The discussion about the resolution lasts for 3 hours and mostly revolves around whether strict scrutiny should be part of this proposed state constitutional amendment. Representative Andy McKean says he supports placing Second Amendment rights in the state constitution, but not one with strict scrutiny language.
After researching the matter, I have come to the conclusion that I question whether we should join Alabama, Louisiana, and Missouri in requiring courts to apply the strict scrutiny standard to all Second Amendment cases. I come to this conclusion for three reasons. Number one, I question why we would elevate the Second Amendment above all other amendments. Number two, I think the strict scrutiny requirement fails to recognize that there are a wide variety of matters touching on the Second Amendment that call for different levels of scrutiny and flies in the face of established court precedent. And finally, number three, I think the strict scrutiny requirement would tie the hands of future legislatures as they contend with changing times and circumstances.
Representative Art Stade poses a series of questions to Representative Winchell about what kind of present laws or future laws may be affected by his resolution.
Can you say convincingly that daycare owners would have the legal right to restrict possession and use of firearms on their property?
Nothing in this language restricts private property owners or public places that already have restrictions from continuing those restrictions or enacting new ones if they see fit. That's not encompassed in this proposal.
Representative Winchell, can you assure me and Iowans that a business owner who has a sincerely held objection to firearms on their property could retain the legal right to restrict the use of and possession of firearms on their individual property?
Yes. Look at the joint resolution that's before us. Where does it say in here that we're restricting a private property owner's ability to maintain or govern their own property? We're not. All we're saying is we're putting a restriction on government, not law-abiding citizens. Government. That's what this does.
Representative Winchell, would we still have the legal right to deny a permit to carry by government to a person who has been adjudicated seriously mentally ill?
That's part of federal regulations, it's part of state regulations. The answer to your question is yes.
And Representative Winchell, would you say confidently that local law enforcement would have the right to refuse to issue a permit to carry to a person who is convicted of a misdemeanor crime of domestic assault?
That's part of federal statute, is my understanding, and part of state law already. If they've got a conviction for domestic assault, that's one of the many firearm prohibitions that are in statute and in federal code.
And Representative Winchell, could you say confidently that the state of Iowa would retain the right to require that people who wish to carry a firearm, whether open or concealed, would obtain even minimal firearm safety training? Could government do this?
You're sure asking me to answer confidently on a whole bunch of stuff, and the answer is, I believe that would fit a narrowly tailored, compelling government interest.
And Representative Winchell, would you say convincingly that with the Second Amendment, rather than your additional language, that these rights are already guaranteed?
I believe that Iowans have a certain degree of protection under the U.S. Constitution, yes.
So I'm going to ask you one last time. Does your language provide any additional rights to gun owners?
I believe it codifies the case law that is out there and provides a degree of protection that Iowans need and deserve.
Well, one last question, Representative. If there are only three states that have this language in their constitutions, why only the three?
I haven't asked the other 40-some-odd states out there why they haven't done it, but I've got no problem being a trailblazer here in Iowa. We've come a long way advancing Second Amendment rights in this state in the past decade, and I think it's high time that we protect them in our state constitution.
Thank you, Representative Winchell. Thank you.
Additional amendments are filed. One would replace the phrase right to bear arms to the right to health care, another to guarantee a right for children to have public education, another would add the right to have a clean environment. They are all immediately ruled not germane. Techniques like this are common, and they can allow a legislator to make a statement on the record or slow down the debate on an issue they disagree with. Representative Skylar Wheeler rises in support of this resolution and says whether anyone likes it or not, it is a fundamental right to keep and bear arms.
I've listened to this debate, I've listened to the lawyer talk, and here I've listened to the scrutiny about strict scrutiny. But, Mr. Speaker, it's really simple. I have a right to keep and bear arms. I have a right to defend myself. I have a right to defend my family. I have a right to defend my freedom. It is that simple, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I like my freedom. And I like having a way to ensure that I keep that freedom against those who want to strip that from me. I appreciate, again, House Joint Resolution 2009. I appreciate Representative Winchell's work on this. And I want to end with this, because this really, to me, speaks to the reason why I support this. Thomas Jefferson said, "No free man shall ever be debarred the use of arms." No free man. This bill is about freedom, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Representative Winchell. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
As Representative Winchell makes closing remarks, he says guns don't commit acts of violence. Bad people with bad intentions do.
So when you take this vote here tonight, don't just think about the politics of it. Please don't get washed up in the rhetoric of this undoes gun rights or it doesn't. You don't have to believe me. I get that. Think about the effect that this has for our children in the future. Think about how this protects an individual fundamental right and how this can be one of the bellwethers where we look at other rights that the government might try and restrict. And we can point back to something like this and say, no, we don't let our fundamental rights go easily. We're not going to give up. What does our flag say? I remember back in 2012, Representative Horbach sat right down there where Representative Fisher sits now. He ran an amendment on this and he brought up that flag and it warrants repeating. Our liberties we prize and our rights we will maintain. How much clearer can you get with this amendment? It's not vague. It's not ambiguous. Let's read it. For the record, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The sovereign state of Iowa affirms and recognizes this right to be a fundamental individual right. Any and all restrictions of this right shall be subject to strict scrutiny. How is that vague? How is that ambiguous? How does that leave the courts with any room? It doesn't. It says we mean it. These are fundamental rights. No future legislature, no future judiciary is coming into our state and taking away our fundamental rights. Not happening. Iowans get the final say on this. We can do whatever we want to do here today. I can grandstand on this soapbox forever. I've got unlimited closing remarks. But Iowans get the final say. If we do this here today, this gets forwarded to the next General Assembly. I'm pretty sure I'm going to be here, but my voters will determine that come November. And then we can have this discussion again. And then Iowans get the final say. They get a vote yes, they get a vote no. They get to make the determination if they want this in our Constitution. So if all of my other arguments have fallen on deaf ears, if you just want to think I'm some crazy gun-loving kook, fine. Have at that, but think about this. Voting no on this here tonight is denying Iowans an opportunity to have their voice heard in what they want in their state constitution. So Representative Meyer brought me up on the floor earlier wanting me to say whether this was a vote for the Second Amendment or a vote against the Second Amendment. This is a vote to protect the Second Amendment and bringing modern day protections for an individual, fundamental, unalienable right. Why wouldn't we want Iowans to have that opportunity? Seriously. Look, I understand some people don't hold the individual fundamental rights of having Second Amendment virtues pushed forward. They don't hold the same passion for it that I do. But there's plenty of other members in this chamber that have taken to the floor, whether in points of personal privilege or on other debates, and they've brought up other rights. As I've done my research, and this isn't just anecdotal, but as I've done my research into why the founders incorporated this protection in the U.S. Constitution, they recognized this as a fundamental right, an inalienable right, which means it cannot be taken away. When they put this in the Constitution, they did it to protect everything else that they were doing. They did it to protect the First Amendment, the Third Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, all of everything that was in the Bill of Rights. They did it so the citizens of this great country had a means of recourse and could tell their government, no, that's too far. So this isn't about me thinking that the government's coming out to get everybody's guns, but this is about protecting that individual fundamental right and establishing what we've already known to be held true by the U.S. Supreme Court in this language. We're codifying Heller, we're codifying McDonald.
Through the evening, Windschuttle references two separate U.S. Supreme Court cases from the past decade. The Heller case states a person can possess a firearm without being in a militia, and McDonald allows a person to have a gun regardless of what a local law may say otherwise. The resolution passes 54-42. 2 days later, it is debated in the Senate for 2 hours, where it also passes. To move forward, it has to be debated again in both chambers sometime in the next 2 years. If it is passed again, it will be on a voter ballot potentially as early as 2019. This is Under the Golden Dome, a legislative podcast from Iowa Public Radio. I'm John Pemble. Last year, during the session, there were two budget shortfalls exceeding $100 million each. In the first month of the session, a de-appropriations bill eliminating $118 million was passed. Then in March 2017, the Revenue Estimating Conference projected the balance would be off by an additional $131 million. Instead of running another de-appropriations bill, money from the state's rainy day fund was used. By the time the fiscal year was over, the state was again short. In September, Governor Reynolds transferred $13 million from the Economic Emergency Fund to avoid calling a special legislative session. As the 2018 session began, estimates put the state at around $35 million short. The governor released her proposed de-appropriations, but the Senate and House had different versions. Now the House has passed a bill, and it's up to the Senate to make it final. Senate President Charles Schneider removes himself from the president's chair, a position he just started last week, to manage the bill because he is also the chair of the Appropriations Committee.
As a reminder, the Iowa Constitution requires the governor and the General Assembly to enact a balanced budget and to avoid budget deficits. The spending limitation law that we have in the Iowa Code limits the amount that the General Assembly can spend to 99% of projected revenue. When we passed the budget last year, we were in compliance with Iowa law. We spent less than 99% of available revenues. We had an ending balance of over $100 million. And the budget was only $9 million more than the previous year's budget. In the time since then, revenues have come in lower than projected. This means that we must make adjustments in order to comply with our own law. We sent a bill to the House for their consideration that would do just that. This is their amendment to our bill. The amendment does the following. It makes an adjustment of $23.3 million to the general fund for fiscal year 18. It transfers $10 million from a business incentive fund to the general fund, and it leaves us with an ending balance of $31.9 million for fiscal year 18. The amendment allows agencies maximum flexibility in implementing these adjustments, and like our bill, the amendment fully funds K-12 education, Medicaid, the Iowa State Patrol, the property tax backfill to local governments, and victim assistance grants. The amendment also fully funds non-public school transportation in the University of Northern Iowa. The amendment also corrects some confusing, ambiguous, and outdated language in the code relating to the governor's authority to transfer funds from the Economic Emergency Fund to balance the budget and close the books when the general fund has a negative balance and the legislature is not in session. The amendment provides specifically that an appropriation from the Economic Emergency Fund shall not exceed 1% of the adjusted revenue estimate for the fiscal year in which the appropriation is being made and is contingent upon two things occurring. First, the balance in the general fund must be negative. Second, the governor must issue an official proclamation and notify the Legislative Fiscal Committee and LSA that the balance of the general fund is negative and an appropriation is needed to bring the fund into balance.
Schneider is referring to the $13 million the governor transferred last September. Her action has since been interpreted as illegal by a Democrat on the House Appropriations Committee, Representative Chris Hall. 3 months ago, Representative Hall filed a lawsuit against Governor Reynolds because of this action. Part of this deappropriations bill will give the governor authority to transfer funds in a similar situation, and
the appropriation made in this bill is retroactive to this time.
Which means her action from several months ago would no longer be considered illegal, and it would dismiss the lawsuit presently pending. Senator Rob Hoeg supports some of this revision, but he does not support its retroactive clause.
This amendment goes in like a laser surgery on the $13 million that Governor Reynolds in September of 2017 unilaterally transferred out of the Economic Emergency Fund when she did not have the authority to do that. And she did it to avoid what she considered the embarrassment of a special session. This is about the legislative branch standing up for the legislative branch against the overreach of an executive who by executive order tried to do something she was not legally entitled to do. So this is, I think Senator Schneider acknowledged she didn't have the authority to do it. We've got to clean it up or sweep it under the rug. In January, Representative Hall had the courage to stand up and sue to defend the legislature. None of the Republicans stepped up to defend the legislature, and now you're just trying to sweep it under the rug. This issue deserves debate and consideration, and we should not be a rubber stamp for illegal acts of Governor Reynolds.
Senator David Johnson asks Senator Schneider why the bill contains a retroactive clause.
I don't understand why you would want some kind of frivolous lawsuit to continue when this is something that we can clear up and also address language for governors going forward, whether they be Republican or Democrat.
Who are you?
This is just common sense.
Senator Schneider, please. Who says it's a frivolous lawsuit?
It's an unnecessary lawsuit. If you don't want to call it frivolous, let's call it unnecessary. Why would you say it is necessary?
Are we bailing the governor out?
What we're doing is clearing up a loophole in Iowa law that does not meet the intent of the legislature when it passed it. Why would, what possible reason would you have to, let's say you wanted to offer a bill that said, okay, the governor can plug up a shortfall in the general fund. If that shortfall is between 0.5% and $50 million, but not below 0.5%. If it's below 0.5%, let's call all the legislators back to Des Moines, have a special session, spend maybe more than what the shortfall actually is to try and plug up a shortfall. That is a ridiculous result.
I don't think in a special session it would necessarily mean.
What if the shortfall was $1,000, Senator?
Point of
if
order.
The
point of
shortfall
order,
was $1,000, it would
requested.
Cost.
Senator Schneider, I'm asking the questions here.
I'm answering. No, I can't help that you don't like
point
the answer.
Point of order. Point of order. Okay, Senator Schneider,
and
thank
what?
You very much. Thank you very much. Okay. Don't have any further questions, Mr. President. But it's obvious why we're doing this, Senator Schneider. We're bailing out the governor. How embarrassing it would be if we had to come back and fix the budget again. Do you know, Senator Schneider, we've been fixing the budget over and over and over again. I go back to my town hall meeting, Senator Schneider, and people ask me, why can't you legislators get it right? What's wrong down there?
Concerning what is to be cut, Senator Herman Kornbach files an amendment to spare the $500,000 cut to community colleges.
How to find the $500,000 needed to restore this cut? Well, actually, the answer's easy. When Senator Dix left in disgrace last week, he left behind about $500,000 in a campaign account for the Senate Republicans. I think that would be a nice down payment on the sexual harassment judgment against the Senate Republican caucus.
Point of orders.
Through this session, Democrats have often brought up the $1.75 million the state paid to settle a sexual harassment case in September. Kornbach says Republicans should restore the community college funding and then go out and raise money to pay for the sexual harassment settlement.
Don't take it out on the taxpayers. And certainly don't take it out on the community college students who are struggling to pay their tuition, who are working hard to get the skills they need to build their futures. Don't make these young students pay for your bad behavior. Go out and raise the money to pay your debts. Don't leave the taxpayers or these students on the hook for paying for your bad behavior.
At the university level, the Iowa Board of Regents is receiving the largest cut of $11 million. It will not affect the University of Northern Iowa, but it will Iowa State University and the University of Iowa. Senator Joe Bolcom says over the past year, Regent universities have been cut by $50 million.
The Regents' total general fund appropriation in fiscal year 2018 is less than it was in 1998. This is despite significant enrollment growth at Iowa State and enrollment growth at the University of Iowa. As Senator Bowman indicated, this is a tuition increase for every Iowa kid at those two institutions. We just talked about Future Ready this week and the need for a skilled workforce. This year, the undergraduate class at the University of Iowa, 25% of the kids are first-generation students. 25% are first-generation students. Those students are coming from households that need affordable tuition. Those folks are the workforce of the future, and we've just ensured that their future ready is going to be future tuition increases.
Senator Rick Bertrand, who isn't running for re-election this year, congratulates Senator Schneider for his work on this bill and putting the state's financial house back where it should be.
First, I want to thank Senator Schneider for all your work on this, man. I know it's been a long row to hoe, and you've done a great job. And at the end of the day, you're going to put our house back in order where it should be. And great job, man. Great job. You know, here we are, you know, year eight. I'm sitting here in doom and gloom, Senator Bolcom, doom and gloom. You know, every year I hear about it, it's just doom and gloom. It's the old playbook of, you know, we're talking about scaring them. We talked about it with the gun bill, and we're going to scare them, so let's scare Iowans now. The bottom line is Iowans are smart enough to understand that how it works down here, and you know how it works down here. We get an estimate from the REC. They give us a number. We manage to that number. When the number comes in, if it's high, we can spend a little more. If it comes low, we got to reel it back. That's where we're at right now. So again, this is misleading. And if this is you guys' message, you know, I'm trying to help you here. I'm not on the ballot. I'm trying to help you at the ballot box. If your message is this playbook, it doesn't work. Doom and gloom.
The de-appropriations bill is passed on a party line vote. Affected departments have known since the beginning of the session approximately how much they would be cut for this fiscal year. Final amounts include $500,000 to the Department of Revenue, $123,000 to the Department of Natural Resources, $784,000 to the Department of Education, $4.3 million to the Department of Human Services, and $3.4 million to the Department of Corrections. This is the weekly legislative podcast, Under the Golden Dome, from Iowa Public Radio. I'm John Pimble.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
In February, the House Education Committee failed to advance a bill that would give parents some state money to pay for private education for their children. It's too late for a new bill to emerge from that committee due to funnel deadlines passing. A funnel is a deadline for a committee to pass a bill so it can be eligible for debate. But funnel rules don't apply to bills in the Appropriations Committee. This week, the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee presented a similar bill. Senate Study Bill 3206 sets up an education savings grant program for non-public school students. On Thursday morning, Senator Mark Shelgren unveils the bill as part of a three-member appropriations subcommittee panel.
Educational savings accounts will be equal to 60% of the regular program state cost per pupil for the same budget school year. Funds remaining in the account at the end of the school year can be used for future years for qualified expenses at a non-public school and for higher education costs upon graduation of high school. Beginning July 1st, 2019, there will be an appropriation from the general fund made to the Department of Management each year in an amount equal to pay all of the approved educational savings accounts for that year.
Items this money cannot pay for include room and board, transportation, food, or clothing. This bill also does not apply to homeschoolers. A subcommittee can be a bit like a public hearing. Several people are here to voice support or opposition for this bill. Trish Wigler is a supporter. She's from the Iowa Advocates for Choice in Education.
This is about giving Iowa parents more options for educating their children. As you mentioned, this bill would allow more parents to choose a non-public school if that's a setting that they feel best meets their child's needs. Non-public schools are accredited by the state and accredited by agencies approved by the state. So they're a viable, high-quality option, but not every parent can choose that. Not every parent is satisfied with the education their children are receiving. It's not a one-size option. We have great public schools, we have great non-public schools, we have virtual and homeschooling options. This doesn't have to be an us versus them issue. It's about offering parents access to a variety of the high-quality options that are out there.
Tracy Bonday from the Iowa Catholic Conference says public school doesn't work for some students' personality or academic needs.
Every child is unique, and every child has different needs, and these needs can't always be met in the same building. All of our school buildings, whether public or private, have distinct learning cultures. Parents are the only ones primarily responsible for the education of their children, and we believe they have a right in justice to access to some of their tax dollars to help them exercise that duty. At the same time, public schools will always be the backbone of our educational system. The Iowa Catholic Conference does not support reducing total public education funding to pay for this program. It is important to look at this first from the perspective of students and families, not just institutions and funding. We must focus on meeting students' individual needs and the best ways to serve them. We all want the same end results: students who are productive, educated citizens that will be engaged as adults in creating prosperous communities in Iowa.
Connie Ryan from the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa opposes this bill. Ryan says 97% of accredited non-public schools are religious institutions.
They may legally opt out of certain laws because of their religious affiliation. They are allowed to teach their religious tenets and beliefs in their institution. They may compel students to be part of religious classes and religious practices, for example, worship during the school day. They may have policies that limit attendance, admittance, and activities based on their religious beliefs. Policies that, in effect, discriminate against students or potential students.
Keenan Crow from One Iowa says nearly half of all non-public schools have policies that discriminate against gays and lesbians.
While they are completely entitled to do that, as was previously mentioned, they have exemptions within the Iowa Civil Rights Act that allow them to exercise their beliefs in that way. We don't believe that taxpayer funding should be propping up this kind of discriminatory behavior. No public school is allowed to engage in this kind of discriminatory behavior, and therefore, I would not personally want my tax dollars going toward funding an institution that would discriminate against myself, my friends, my family members, etc.
Melissa Peterson of Iowa State Education Association says she is strongly opposed and struggles with the title of this bill cited as the Iowa Student Opportunity Act.
I believe that we have a strong history here in the state of Iowa of making sure that we fulfill our responsibility to the many, not just the few. And I think we have done that very well through our public education system that serves more than 480,000 students across the state, regardless of what their county demographic might look like. For those that think that we might not have options, please know that our public educators go out of their way to understand that one size does not fit all. And legislators understand that one size does not fit all, which is why, under current code, we have access to quality public schools, we have access to public charter schools, we have access to magnet schools, we have access to concurrent enrollment programs, right, that provide us with lots of different flexibility and options under our existing public school structure. For those families, approximately 34,000 students who choose to opt out of that public school program, as a state, we also subsidize that non-public education to the tune of approximately $44 million currently, right? So I would argue we provide plenty of options for those folks who decide to choose things that are not in the public school track. I think it's very important for us to understand that if we were able to come up with additional resources, which, by the way, this legislative session I have repeatedly been told are very, very scarce. You all took action last night to pass a deappropriation bill for our existing fiscal year to the tune of $35 million, right? So I did not realize there were apparently additional dollars to be able to be spent on creating a tandem system that would be subsidized by taxpayer dollars.
Most of the guests here speak against. But of the three-member subcommittee panel, the two Republicans support it, including Ken Rosenboom. Senator Rosenboom says he went to private schools, as did his children.
When it comes to education, that seems to be the only arena in which we say the tax dollars have to be spent in a certain institution. We provide millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to medical services to Iowans. We don't tell them which doctor, which hospital they have to spend those dollars in. We provide a lot of funding for food programs in the state of Iowa and across the country, but we don't tell you which grocery store to buy those groceries in. I think that's a valid observation.
Senator Rosenboom says one of the strengths of non-public schools is that the parents are probably more involved than public school parents.
And I'm not casting aspersions on anyone. It's just a fact of life. The fact that these parents and families are paying for their education, they seem to value it greatly. And while they don't have publicly elected boards, they have an elected board of directors. And I can assure you, accountability and transparency is extremely paramount in those discussions. I've been on school boards. We've watched every dollar, I can assure you. Number four on my list is we have a long history of public dollars going to private institutions in education in Iowa. It's called the Iowa Tuition Grant. We don't seem to have a problem with that. We have a long history of that, and it's been a wonderful partnership with with our region universities, our community colleges, and our small colleges, many of whom have a religious identity. And I just believe that's the argument that public dollars shouldn't go to private schools. We don't seem to have a problem with that with respect to higher learning.
Senator Jeff Danielson disapproves of this bill, and he gives it three Fs.
First F is that it's a false choice. As you've heard the speakers talk about the premises of the bill, that it creates choice. The reality is it does create unequal opportunities for the students who could take advantage of it versus those that can't. And while there are students of disabilities and other socioeconomic status who would take advantage of this, that's a choice. There's no requirement that those schools have to provide that. So I think that's the false premise behind the false choice. The other F that I would give it is I think this is fiscally irresponsible. We still do not know what the final budget for fiscal year 19 will be. We do know that in the last 8 years, we have seen the lowest amount of increase for K-12 education in the history of the school funding formula. My friends on the other side of the aisle like to talk about the overall amount, the real dollar amount, but the reality is, adjusted for inflation, it has been the lowest investment in 8 years in Iowa history. And this is what we're talking about, K-12 education and the investment in it. This bill would further erode that investment. So I think it's fiscally irresponsible.
The bill would allocate approximately $4,000 per pupil attending non-public school. Senator Shelgren says this is only for new students and does not apply to those already enrolled in a private school.
We want to change the perception that private schools are out of their league for everyone. In my hometown, we have two private schools. The tuition at one of them is $2,600 a year. The other one is $3,200 a year. Well below the option of what this fund would generate. This is a savings account controlled by the parents or the guardians to make sure those children have an opportunity and that no family in Iowa should ever say that a private school is out of their league. I am going to be supporting this going forward because I want to make sure that all families, regardless of financial income, have opportunities for their kids. That doesn't mean that there's a private school in every community. There isn't. Doesn't mean that every child won't have an opportunity to get to drive someplace where there is one. But you know what? In states that they have implemented plans like this, up to 3% of the population has taken advantage of that. 3% of the school population. It doesn't impact, 3% isn't what's going to impact those public schools, especially when you realize that we're spending $6,736 a student at the public school level and only 4,000, 60%. So we're giving less money to those parents who want to have that choice, not the full amount. The reason I'm talking about it in this form is because my kids aren't eligible for this. Why? I put my kids in private school a long time ago. Our family can afford it. My daughter, who turned 13 years old the other day, has friends who want the opportunities that she has, but they feel the same exact way we heard earlier, that a private school is out of their league. I want to change that, and I think this bill will do it.
The bill is signed by Shelgren and Rosenboom to move to the full Appropriations Committee. It was introduced late this week, and a fiscal note from the Legislative Services Agency should be available soon. This is Under the Golden Dome, Iowa Public Radio's weekly legislative podcast. I'm John Pimble. April 17th is the proposed final day for the session. In these final days, big questions like how will education savings grants for non-public schools be paid for? Are there potential budget cuts for fiscal year 19? And how might taxes change? Have little time to be answered. To that end,
Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitford says he is working with the House to come up with a budget target number and what changes are coming to Iowa's tax code.
You know, we just got through that de-appropriations negotiation, we've worked very well with, I've worked very well with the Speaker and the Governor over the last couple weeks, and so hopefully that will continue.
We're now in the 11th week of this year's podcast, and every week, Iowa Public Radio journalists, reporters, and producers all chip in to make this show work. They include our Statehouse reporter, Joyce Russell. We are also helped by Katarina Sestarik, talk show producers Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon, and Radio Iowa's Kay Henderson. Iowa Public Radio's news program director is Catherine Perkins. Edits and guidance comes from our news director, Michael Leland. Under the Golden Dome is released Fridays from the IPR app, iowapublicradio.org, and various podcast playback programs like Google Play and iTunes. Under the Golden Dome is a production of Iowa Public Radio.